From 90.9 WBUR, good evening and welcome to a special edition of Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker is about to deliver his 2017 State of the Commonwealth address before a joint session of the legislature on Beacon Hill. We will broadcast his speech in its entirety as soon as the governor takes the podium. Tonight, we expect the governor to highlight statewide successes that he experienced or the state experienced in 2016 on everything from transportation, jobs, and the performance of Massachusetts schools. 2016 was a busy year for Governor Baker. He signed into law a bill that puts tighter controls on opioid prescriptions. He also pushed hard on a ballot initiative to raise the cap on public charter schools. However, that question failed at the ballot box. Baker will also lay out his vision for the Commonwealth in the year ahead. And perhaps more important, the governor is likely to emphasize a politics of bipartisanship and cooperation. And that message comes as Baker faces the challenge of building a relationship with President Donald Trump while leading a state that voted overwhelmingly against Trump. Now, Saturday, we witnessed one of the largest demonstrations in Massachusetts history with more than 175,000 people gathered on Boston Common for the Women's March. Baker was not there. The day before, however, he was at Trump's inauguration. The governor was repeatedly critical of Trump during the campaign, and he did not cast a vote for any presidential candidate. But according to a WBUR poll out this week, the governor has an almost 60% favorability rating amongst respondents here in the state. So again, we will be turning to Governor Baker as soon as he takes the podium on Beacon Hill. But I want to let you know, we also have a great panel of analysts to help us understand what we're likely to hear from the governor tonight. And I just want to introduce them while we have a second here. Susan Tracy is president of the Democratic Consulting Firm, the Strategy Group. She's also a former state representative. It's good to have you back, Susan.
Thanks, Meghna.
And also with us, Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. It's always great to have you, Jim.
Good to be with you.
Now, Susan and Jim, forgive me if I end up cutting you off here briefly because I'm keeping my eye out to see, don't want to miss the governor taking to the podium. But I just want to ask you both quickly, if you had to pick a word or a phrase that would describe what the governor has to accomplish this evening with the State of the Commonwealth address, what would it be, Susan?
I would say he needs to build a wall between himself and the National Party.
Build himself between a wall between himself and the Republican Party.
Correct.
Okay. Jim.
Seeing that we don't like walls in this room, I think it's more Massachusetts' role in Trump's America. That is a more positive. How do you project Massachusetts' strengths, its innovation, its strengths in education, its policy leadership in America, and how do you make sure that you have that distinguishing characteristic that defines what we do here?
Massachusetts' role. Okay, we're seeing that the governor is about to step into the House chamber there, so he's likely to start any moment, but he's not quite yet in the House chamber. We've full House with the joint session they're going on. But Susan, so let me ask you, you and Jim have thematically similar but opposite views then of what, of what Baker has to...
You didn't think I'd go the wall route, did you?
Do you think that it's worth Baker taking the chance to do what you're saying, to build that wall? I mean, he does have to work with the administration in Washington to some degree.
He does. He also needs to be reelected in Massachusetts. And I think that he needs to separate from some of the madness that's going on nationally.
Do you think that that would be tough? I mean, again, with this BUR poll, he's got an almost 60% favorability rating right now.
I think it's going to be very tough for him. I think he's on a really difficult slope right now of trying to appeal to his base while not alienating the larger population.
Jim, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, look, it's just, I'll give you one example. He has to work with the administration for the good of all people here. We have a waiver that's worth about $53 billion for our health care. If that somehow gets unbundled, Massachusetts will face a huge deficit, which will impact all of our programs. So we need to find a way to project what we believe in. Mm-hmm. And work with the administration where we can work with the administration. And frankly, try to give them some tips. I mean, in education, we are the nation's leader. And we should be able to actually seek to project that outwards. We have things that Massachusetts doesn't do as well as other states, and we want to be humble and learn that too.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, Governor Baker finds himself in a unique position amongst any governor in the 50 governors of the United States of America, being the Republican governor of a overwhelmingly or mostly blue state, but one who, you know, didn't throw his hat in at all with the Trump campaign. So, I mean... Susan, let me just come back to you.
Yep.
with doesn't this give him a little bit of a position of strength then to be operating from?
No, I think he has a really difficult dance. I think you're trying to hang on to the Republican base and you're trying to appeal. He won by 40,000 votes, you know, 4 years ago. So you have to appeal to the majority in Massachusetts. So I think he's in a really difficult dance.
Jim, do you think it's going to be as hard for him?
I don't know on the electoral stuff. It's just not something that I take as close a look at. Okay. But what I would say is he has an incredibly strong relationship with both the leaders of the houses, the leaders of both houses. And I think what he wants to say, at least what we saw in the Boston Globe today, was that he wanted to make sure he was talking about working together here in Massachusetts. I think that's absolutely what he has to do. Nationally, I think he does have to project a voice and say, this is what we need as a state that has taken a path on health care. Mm-hmm. You could adversely impact us and other states if you do X, Y, and Z. And there will be many states that don't want to follow Massachusetts' path or the other's path.
Right. Well, we're seeing that the color guard that was holding the American flag and the flag of the Commonwealth is now exiting the House chamber there on Beacon Hill. The national anthem has been sung, but Charlie Baker still hasn't entered the chamber. Oh, actually, looks like he's getting closer to stepping in now. So he's likely to start speaking any minute. I mean, I presume that with the State of the Commonwealth, there's some handshaking that goes on, just like with the State of the Union before the chief executive of the Commonwealth makes it to the podium.
Little pomp and circumstance before we get going.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe we could just hear a little bit of what's going on. Now, you know it's not a Massachusetts political event if there aren't bagpipes, so that's great. So, I mean, obviously we'll hear what the governor has to say as soon as he starts speaking, and we'll talk about the challenges ahead. But since I've got you two, we've got a little bit of time before he speaks. Just briefly, let's look at the year that he did have in 2016. Lots of ups, some downs. I mean, overall, do you think that what was 2016 like for him, Susan?
You know, I think from a policy perspective, he's probably going to have some good issues to point to and working, again, I think collaboratively with the legislature, so I give him a lot of credit for that. I think he understands that he needs to work together. Again, I think his challenges are more political probably than policy. I do. That's what I see as his challenge ahead and in the time that we're in, and I think there'll be some real frustration in this country, and I just think he'll have a difficult balance.
Look, I think working together with both houses, he got a lot done. And I think State of the State is going to underscore, look at all the stuff we got done. At the end of the year, he had two ballot initiatives where the failure was notable in terms
charter
of
schools and marijuana.
Exactly. And I think that underscores the electoral challenge that he will continue to face.
Mm-hmm. Well, Charlie Baker the governor has now entered the House chamber on Beacon Hill, and he is indeed shaking hands with many of the people who are lining the aisle in advance, ready to listen to his speech. Up on in the podium area, we saw Senate President Stan Rosenberg and House Speaker Robert DeLeo, amongst other Beacon Hill leaders. We're at the halfway mark, roughly, after the halfway mark of Governor Baker's tenure this term as governor. So, of course, he gave a speech last year. Before that, we had his inaugural address. So it'll be interesting to see sort of how he himself communicates to us, to the Commonwealth, what he wants to accomplish in his remaining 2 years. He just gave a handshake and a hug there to Attorney General Maura Healey. And still more handshakes going on. I mean, striking a spirit of bipartisanship and cooperation
bipartisan hugs.
There is a hug for Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito, and now Governor Baker has taken to the podium for his 2017 State of the Commonwealth.
Thank you. Thank you. Please. Please, we have lots to talk about. So the real test is if you do that when I'm finished. So, Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, members of the House and Senate, distinguished elected officials, honored guests, and fellow citizens, about 750 days ago, Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito and I stood right here, and we pledged to work with you and others to move this Commonwealth forward, and we have done just that. We built a bipartisan team, worked in partnership with the legislature, and looked for common ground. We worked to fix state government, passed groundbreaking legislation, and focused on growing our economy and it's working. Our economy is among the strongest in the nation. Over the past 2 years, we've added 120,000 jobs. Today, more people are working than at any time in the past 20 years, and our welfare caseload has dropped by 25%. The companies of the future are moving to Massachusetts, bringing millions in private investment, while new companies are born here every day. In fact, for the second year in a row, Bloomberg named Massachusetts the number one state for innovation in the whole country. GE's decision to locate its world headquarters in Boston and its North American Life Sciences headquarters in Marlborough was based in its belief in the talent and the vision of our people. And believe me, any discussion about GE's relocation would not be complete without noting the extraordinary work and collaboration of Boston Mayor Marty Walsh and his team. Thank you. Mr. Mayor, I look forward to working with you on the next Patriots Super Bowl victory party. The job gains have benefited every corner of our state. For example, New Bedford had the steepest unemployment decline in the entire country, with an unemployment rate. There you go, Mr. Mayor. With an unemployment rate that's fallen from 6.5% to just 3.7% in the past year. And it's not an accident that Massachusetts is such an attractive place to do business. It's a reflection of the quality of our people and the climate we've created here. The progress we've made on energy is a perfect example. Together, we passed landmark legislation that will reduce our carbon footprint while maintaining a competitively priced and reliable supply of energy. And we've built on those efforts by issuing an executive order on climate change that directs state government to work with local governments, business, and nonprofits to further develop and protect our environment and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And thanks to the hard work of state and local officials, teachers, and parents, our students are number one in the nation in both math and reading for the sixth straight year. Now, our shared commitment to funding local schools has led to an all-time high in Chapter 70 education funding, representing an increase of $227 million over the past 2 years. And we've also made attending a public college more affordable. Through the Commonwealth commitment, we've created a pathway for students to secure a bachelor's degree from UMass or one of our state universities for half the price. Brockton's own Jacqueline Bell is here tonight. And she's a great example of who this program is helping. Jacqueline is 26 years old. She has a 2-year-old daughter, and she's currently a straight-A student at Massasoit Community College. And she said the Commonwealth commitment changed her family's life. Look at you. Jacqueline, we all look forward to watching you build on your success. We've also reviewed and updated and eliminated thousands of pages of outdated and obsolete state regulations, which has reduced red tape and made it easier for employers, nonprofits, and cities and towns to do their jobs. And we all know that high-speed internet has become central to the way we communicate, learn, and do business. But in too many communities in Western Mass, they still don't have access to this essential service. That's why this past May, we completely overhauled the Last Mile program for our rural communities. We started with 53 towns lacking high-speed internet access. And while we still have a lot more work to do, in just 6 months, we've moved a dozen towns forward. And that's more progress on local broadband than we've made in the last 5 years, with lots more to get done in the near future. And we've done all of that and more while closing a billion-dollar state budget gap without raising taxes. Fiscal responsibility is challenging work, and it's not the stuff that wins popularity contests. But by working together, we've controlled the runaway growth in spending and nearly eliminated the structural deficit in just 2 years. We've reduced the state's bureaucracy, saving hundreds of millions of dollars, and we're working smarter and making state government more accountable to the people who pay the bills. We also ended the previous practice of using rainy day funds to bail out the state budget. Instead, we've invested in this fund despite lower revenue growth and have set the Commonwealth on solid financial footing going forward. We propose closing the tax loophole on Airbnb, but we will oppose any effort to pass a broad-based tax increase on the hardworking people of the Commonwealth. We've also made real progress in supporting those who need our help, helping families fighting homelessness and ending the practice of putting homeless families into hotels and motels has been a priority for us. To get there, we've taken a different approach. We've been working with housing authorities and other housing providers to help families avoid homelessness in the first place and relying on more permanent solutions. And in 2 years, the population of homeless families in hotels and motels has been reduced from 1,500 to fewer than 100 families today. Years ago, the Department of Children and Families, which serves more than 50,000 at-risk kids, was in crisis. It's a very different place today. There are 270 more social workers on the job than there were just over a year ago, and 95% are licensed, which is up from 50% when we took office. Caseloads. Thank you. Caseloads are as low as they've been in decades, and long-promised clinical and administrative supports are now in place. New policies concerning investigations, home-based services, supervisory practices, and missing children have been collaboratively implemented with the full support of DCF's union workforce. But when it comes to at-risk kids, we can never rest easy. DCF still needs to recruit more foster homes and do a better job working with foster families. And DCF will continue to work with the courts and the legal community to reduce uncertainty for kids by shortening the time they have to wait for a permanent and loving home. Now, DCF Commissioner Linda Spears is with us tonight. Linda, you and your team are doing a great job. And on behalf of the families and children you serve, thank you. As in other states, we continue to deal with the heinous crime of human trafficking. And through compassion for young boys and girls, my wife Lauren championed bringing back the State Police Anti-Human Trafficking Unit. Now for that and so many other things she does every day, I say thanks. We worked with all of you to craft legislation for Uber, Lyft, and other transportation networking companies. This legislation respects the important role of the sharing economy while benefiting hundreds of thousands of passengers as well as drivers here in the Commonwealth. For example, people with disabilities often have trouble finding reliable transportation, especially for unexpected trips, making it difficult to complete their education or work full-time. It's a huge problem. The T's Ride took advantage of our new law to set up a pilot with Uber and Lyft to serve about 400 people with disabilities. And so far, that pilot has delivered more than 7,000 rides. Manish Agarwal is blind and uses the ride. He's here with us tonight. He and his wife live in Arlington with their young daughter. Now, recently, Manish had to take his daughter to the doctor unexpectedly. He used the pilot program and called Uber instead of waiting for the ride. It was easy, prompt, and it cut his travel time in half. Thanks to the pilot program, he was able to focus on the needs of his daughter instead of worrying about transportation. Manish, I want to thank you for being here with us tonight and for sharing your story. His story, by the way, echoes those we've heard from many others who've used this pilot. The overwhelming message from participants could not be more clear. This program has changed my life. We hear it over and over again. Now, we all know, especially here in this room, the opioid epidemic is ravaging individuals and families across this country. And while this is going to be a prolonged battle, our efforts are making a difference. We know that 4 out of 5 heroin users first become addicted through prescription drugs, and we're seeing results from our efforts to close this front door to addiction. For the first time, medical, dental, and nursing schools are requiring students to master opioid therapy and pain management, and continuing education on these issues is now part of our state licensing programs. And after years and years of increases, the number of opioids prescribed in Massachusetts is now down by 15%. Prescribers have made more than 2 million searches of the new prescription monitoring program, and this makes it harder for people to doctor shop for pain pills or for pill mills to operate here in Massachusetts. Spending on addiction services has been increased by 50%. Hundreds of additional treatment beds and voluntary programs have come online. Family and peer support groups have doubled, and been funded across the Commonwealth, and thousands of Narcan kits have been distributed to first responders and family members. And our work on this has not gone unnoticed. An unprecedented 46 governors have signed on to a compact to fight opioid addiction that's based on our efforts here in the Commonwealth. Make no mistake, drug traffickers are part of the opioid epidemic. They prey on vulnerable people, selling them more and more deadly and addictive substances. We'll also propose $2 million in our budget to expand law enforcement's effort to arrest and convict drug traffickers. And with your help, we also ended the decades-old practice of sending women who were civilly committed due to an addiction to Framingham State Prison. Thank you. Instead, they now enter a treatment program, including the new one at Taunton State Hospital. And these programs have been a game changer for many of the women they serve. And based on this success, we'll request an increase in state funding to support treatment for men who are committed due to an addiction as well. Now, there's a storm that's been going on for the past couple of days, and all I can think about that is I'm sure glad it's not 10 degrees colder. The MBTA's historical failure during the winter of 2015 laid bare the vital need for a complete overhaul. But never forget, the T always had the money. What it lacked was the capacity to turn its resources into an action plan to deliver the safe and reliable transportation system that our people deserve. The Fiscal and Management Control Board, the management team, and the staff at the T cut the MBTA's operating deficit in half. These significant savings, along with existing funds, are being used to double the T's investment in core infrastructure. And while a lot of great work has been done in the past 18 months, anyone who rides the T will correctly tell you we still have a long way to go. Everything that breaks is at least 50 years old. Making the investments in tracks, signals, switches, power systems, and vehicles will take years, not months. But we finally have the team on the ground and the plan in place to get the job done. And after months of discussion, the MBTA reached an agreement on a new contract with its largest union, the Carmen's Union, Local 589. This is a win-win for all involved. Riders and taxpayers have a competitive contract that respects market standards, while union members have predictability and achievable ground rules for measuring performance. Both sides could have turned this one into an epic brawl, but instead they chose to be part of the answer. Jim O'Brien, the president of the Carmen's Union, and Brian Shortsleeve and Joe Aiello of the T are here with us tonight, and for your hard work, vision, and leadership during these difficult and complicated times, you deserve our thanks. Remember all those toll booths we used to have on the Mass Pike? Yeah, me neither. Going live with an all-electronic tolling system and taking down the toll booths could have been a disaster. In fact, many people in this room predicted it would be. but a terrific engineering and planning effort across multiple agencies made sure the work was done at night and on weekends, assuring that commuters were not delayed going to and from work. Kudos to the Secretary and her team. With a shared sense of purpose, we've made real progress in job creation, fiscal discipline, education, child welfare, public health, transportation, public safety, environmental and energy policy, and community building during the past 2 years. And because of all that, I stand here tonight and say the state of our Commonwealth is strong. Now, we all know the world is becoming more and more dependent on technology. Smart buildings, smarter machines, robotics, autonomous vehicles, digital health, precision manufacturing, and big data, to name just a few. These are the platforms of the next generation of great companies and new jobs. And cybersecurity that moves as fast as the hackers, the thieves, and the troublemakers is what makes all this possible. Success in protecting databases and smart machines will ensure that people benefit from the best ideas in science, engineering, and technology for decades to come. We're already one of the three most important players in cyber in the world. Businesses in Massachusetts protect proprietary information and secure smart machines and smart buildings from attack. But this industry is just taking off. Hundreds of billions of dollars will be spent over the next decade to protect information and assets. Massachusetts organizations should play a major role in driving these decisions. And over the next 10 months, we'll bring together the best minds locally and globally to develop a blueprint for success here in Massachusetts, and then we will follow through and execute on it. Now, we all know our strength as a Commonwealth is based in many ways on our work with 351 cities and towns. The important reforms enacted last session give local leaders new tools to better serve their constituency. And you don't have to take my word for it. The Mass Municipal Association called those changes the most significant reform of municipal governance in more than 50 years. Thanks to the tireless work of Lieutenant Governor Polito, more than 250 communities have joined with us to work on 600 best practices that will make local governments more successful. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, for your extraordinary work on this. Looking ahead, our budget will propose more than $130 million in new funding for cities and towns, including increasing Chapter 70 support for K-12 education by more than $90 million, twice the amount required under state law. And for the first time, we propose funding a down payment toward increasing state support for municipal health insurance. Our capital program will build on previous efforts to invest in local communities. We'll continue unprecedented levels of investment in roads, bridges, economic development, and housing, because these investments help our colleagues in local government build strong communities, leverage billions of dollars in private sector investment, and they create jobs. You guys got that. We should also be proud of our achievements in education. But we must also recognize that not every child in the Commonwealth gets to attend a first-class school. We have an obligation to every parent and child in Massachusetts, and in this effort, we must succeed. To assist struggling schools, we'll work with Representative Peisch, Senator Lesser, and their colleagues in the House and Senate to create more empowerment zones. These zones create more flexibility in schools and allow educators to make the changes necessary to provide a better learning environment for our kids. I visited one in Springfield, and it's pretty clear that this model is already making a positive difference for teachers and students there. In addition, the experience of struggling districts in Lawrence, Southbridge, and Holyoke has demonstrated that state takeovers can offer significant benefits to students, parents, and teachers in schools that need our support. And we encourage the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education to continue to use this tool. Now, for decades, mental health advocates have urged the Commonwealth to redesign the way it serves those who are committed to Bridgewater State Hospital. Little has changed, and the results in many cases have been disastrous for all involved. We propose to do two things to address this long-standing and unacceptable situation. First, move corrections officers out of the hospital and instead deploy them outside the facility to provide security. Second, the size and scale of the clinical program offered inside the hospital will be significantly expanded. This reform will not come cheap. The spending on clinical services will increase by $37 million. Now, this is the right thing to do, and we ask the legislature to support it. I would also like to extend our thanks to John Mograss and the Massachusetts Correctional Officers Federated Union for being a true partner in our efforts to make these reforms, because, John, they wouldn't have happened without your support. Thank you. Now, we must also think differently about how we support and engage older adults. The notion that people are fully retired at the age of 62 or 65 is inconsistent with what I see every day. And even if some have stepped back from what they spent most of their lives doing, most still have tons of time and talent available to do something else. I turned 60 in November. 60! I remember thinking that was ancient when my dad turned 60. Now he's 88, and he's still the smartest and most informed person I know. And, Dad, nobody gives better advice than you do. There are thousands of citizens in Massachusetts who are still very much in the game in their 60s, 70s, and even 80s, and there'll be more as our population continues to age. I'll be signing an executive order in the coming weeks that will establish a council on older adults, and it will focus on policies and programs that make it possible for even more older adults and seniors to live vibrant, purposeful lives here in the Commonwealth. Finally, too many of our returning heroes struggle to find good jobs. Jesse Brown and Matt Mastroianni, did I get that right? Close enough, thanks. The founders of Hydrea Communications of Plymouth and Bellingham are with us tonight. Hydrea constructs, maintains, and repairs cell towers, a booming business in today's wireless world. After serving our country as United States Marines, they both joined a large firm in the cell tower space. But in 2007, they left the comfort of a big company to to go out on their own. The beginning was rocky, but today they employ 70 people, almost half of whom are veterans like them, and their future is bright. Like many small businesses, they want to hire and employ our veterans, and we should make it easier for them to get it done. So we'll be proposing a $4,000 tax credit for businesses that hire and retain an unemployed veteran, and we all wish Jesse and Matt continued success, and we want to thank them and all veterans for their service to our country. Now, in closing, on behalf of Lieutenant Governor Polito, our cabinet, our team, and the people of Massachusetts, I want to thank you, the legislature, for your goodwill. That may seem like a small thing, but it's not. Too much of what passes for political dialogue these days isn't dialogue at all. It's talking points, character assassination, and deliberate misrepresentation. Wedge issues may be great for making headlines, but they do not move this Commonwealth forward. Success is measured by what we accomplish together. Our obligation to the people we serve is too important to place politics and partisanship before progress and results. And the changes in Washington don't change this powerful obligation. Our job remains the same. That is, to represent Massachusetts to Washington and not Washington to Massachusetts. We can and we do disagree, but we listen, we learn, and we make the best decisions we can. On energy, public records, pay equity, addiction, economic development, and a host of other issues, you've compromised with one another and with us. Now, like other states, we have enormous challenges here in the Commonwealth, issues that are destined to create difficult discussions and opportunities for conflict. And we live in a time where what you oppose seems much more interesting than what you support, where compromising is often viewed as an act of weakness, when in fact it is a sign of strength. Now, our founders worried a lot about the tyranny of the majority. They designed our form of government to provide a loud voice for minority points of view. They hated the idea of unilateral power and wanted to force advocates and policymakers through structure and process to compromise. I'm with them. As my mom used to say, you have two ears and one mouth for a reason. It's one thing to stand in a corner and shout insults at your opponents. It's quite another to climb into the arena and fight for common ground. I believe it's this conversation that makes us strong. Our economy is strong because we listen and we learn from the workers and employers who make it go. Our communities are strong because local leaders and active citizens listen and learn from the people they serve. And our Commonwealth is strong because we listen and we learn from one another. knowing that our goodwill can make our disagreements a catalyst for better ideas and real results. Now, our team looks forward to working with you in the challenges and opportunities of the next 2 years. We will advocate, we will engage, we will learn from you and others, and we will be better for it. God bless the Commonwealth, and God bless the United States.
You're listening to a special edition of Radio Boston and live coverage of Governor Charlie Baker's 2017 State of the Commonwealth Address right here on 90.9 WBUR. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Governor Baker came out and said the state of our Commonwealth is strong. He just wrapped up his address. He spoke for about 40 minutes. He talked about adding jobs to the state of Massachusetts, that more people were working at any time than in the past 20 years. He talked about Massachusetts being the number one state for innovation. Of course, he made major talking points of energy, education, funding for local aid, closing a nearly $1 billion state budget gap last year. He talked about the process of turning around DCF and the T after the disastrous 2015 winter. But he closed his speech with perhaps some of his strongest rhetoric yet, talking about working across party lines in Massachusetts, saying, quote, "It's one thing to stand in a corner and shout insults at your opponents. It's quite another to climb into the arena and fight for common ground. I believe it's this conversation that makes us strong." Well, we've got special coverage and great analysis, great analysts right here in our studio. Susan Tracy, president of the Democratic Consulting Firm, The Strategy Group, and she's also a former state rep. Susan, good to have you.
Thanks, Meghna.
And Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Good to have you as well. So before the governor spoke, I asked both of you to describe a word or phrase that you thought would encapsulate what he needed to say tonight. And Susan, you said that the governor needed to build a wall between himself and the national GOP. Jim, you said that he needed to talk about or define Massachusetts' role as a state leader on the national stage. And so I got to ask you, he either pleased you both or disappointed you both. And I'm going to point to one of what I think was the biggest applause line of the night, wherein the governor said the changes in Washington don't change this powerful obligation. Our jobs remain the same. That is to represent Massachusetts to Washington and not Washington to Massachusetts. So, Jim, successful speech?
Smart speech. Smart speech. It's who he is. It plays to his strengths. It's truly a state of the state in terms of a static address. That is, he took a victory lap and underscored all the things that Charlie Baker is good at. Charlie Baker's not good at the sexy vision. Mm-hmm. So he laid out chapter and verse and then a few other sub-chapters and sub-verses, all the things that got done over the last 18 months. And it is actually an impressive record, and it's one that was achieved together. And if you talk to the leaders in both houses, they will say they feel part of it. So this is a very smart speech. Does it do everything that he needs to do in year three to get him ready for an election? I think it's a different question.
Interesting. But, yeah. Because in terms of vision of what he actually wants to accomplish here in Massachusetts, I do have to say it was very much a sort of Mr. Fix-It speech, you know, talking about tax credits for veterans and Council on Aging, things like that. Not necessarily like, here's how Massachusetts is going to lead on the national stage.
I think that's right. And I think this is the question. This is a hypothesis he's building. That is, he's working off a hypothesis that says, look, if I talk about the T and all the savings and how I'm investing in the core system and it's going to improve your life on your mobility and moving around, is that during an election year what will get him reelected? Or is it saying my vision for transportation is, mm-hmm. and that's a, he's working off a hypothesis.
Or maybe he's working off a 2020 vision. We'll see. Susan Tracy, did he build a big enough wall between himself and the national GOP?
I think he built a wall, tried to build a wall between himself and Washington. I don't think he defined it quite in a partisan way, but I think he's trying to build a wall. We're different, right? We're not doing it that way. I agree with some of the things that Jim said. What struck me about the speech, you know, laundry list of things that have been accomplished, right? So, you know, I think, Meghna, you said them all. And what struck me was that it was the ending for me was more about style than substance. And here's a guy who's about substance, right?
Right.
And his substance for the future was kind of weak, to be honest with you. I mean, I like Charlie Baker. I thought it was a nice speech. I think that's right. It was very Charlie Baker. It was safe. But, you know, cybersecurity, a council on older adults,
Empowerment zones, which he has talked about before. It's not a new idea.
Tax credit for veterans. I think we've been doing that, veteran hires. So, you know, I was surprised that there weren't a lot of big ideas here. It was much more of a laundry list. And again, what struck me was the ending was really what that speech was all about in terms of the future. And it was about style and not substance.
But doesn't that matter now? I think it does. Let me rephrase. I think that matters now based on the tone of the national politics has been, that here we have a governor of a leading state say, no, I don't want that to be the political discourse here in Massachusetts. And I'm going to come out and say it.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Jim, I think you said this a little bit, too. I think there's some of that. I don't know how far it takes you, though. You know, I think style is great, and I think it's great that you're working together and you can get things done. But at some point, I think people want to know that you're getting a little bit more done than some of that. And big ideas and a little vision in a leader, I do think you do expect that as well.
Jim?
If I just go back to the hypothesis, and this is a really, I think it's really interesting. Look, if we were a different state, it would probably be different, but Massachusetts always punched above its weight nationally. We've always seen ourselves from the opening shot when we went for independence onward, to women's rights and abolitionism. We've always seen ourselves as a national leader, a conversation setter in the country. In the current climate nationally, is that who we'll want to have there in 4 years? So will people want to have Bridgewater State Hospital, which frankly... people may not know this in Massachusetts, but nationally is known as a basket case. It's one that has an incredible reputation in the negative. Well, if we could absolutely fix that, would that sate people's desire for change and for vision? I think it's a big question. I think it is not Charlie's strength. I don't think it ever has been to set the vision on substance. And in fact, many people in his own party criticize him as... interacting with others and listening to them and letting them set the agenda as much as he is setting it. And I think kind of what he's trying to say is, well, that's good. And that's, I think it's a debatable point for the electorate and for anyone who's listening.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute, and Susan Tracy, who's President of the Strategy Group and a former state rep, about the 2017 State of the Commonwealth Address just delivered by Governor Charlie Baker. Susan and Jim, if you could just stand by for a quick second, I want to hop over to the State House and speak with WBUR's Steve Brown, who's there on the line. Steve, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Magna.
So what was the mood like in the House chamber as the governor was giving his speech?
Well, the speech was very warmly received. I counted 49 times. It was interrupted by applause by members of the legislature and a lot of the honored guests who are here. As you know, there are 200 legislators, but there's probably another 200 people in this room right now, various supporters of the governor. So it's an extra crowded room and an extra enthusiastic crowd here for the governor. Got several standing ovations, a lot of applause lines in the speech. Throughout that, he was about a 37-minute-long speech. He was outlining his accomplishments of the past year. The overall theme was collaboration mm-hmm. with the lawmakers here. So obviously they were going to be very enthusiastic about that because he's giving them credit for everything that's accomplished as well.
Steve Brown, WBUR's reporter at the State House. Steve, thank you very much.
Thanks, Magna.
Susan and Tracy, let me turn back to you. So warmly received, as you heard Steve say, that was the feeling in the room. But I'm wondering if we could just pick up more with what you guys were talking about and explore whether or not there was a missed opportunity here for the governor. Because, for example, I mean, whether it's big V vision or little V vision, you know, there are major issues right here in Massachusetts that I think people are hungering to hear from the governor on. I mean, we had this recent WBUR poll that found out, for example, regarding health care, 66% of the respondents in that poll said they're really dissatisfied with the cost of health care and the common health. Same thing with housing, a huge overwhelming majority saying it's too expensive. I mean, these are big, weighty, transformative issues that are touching the lives of everybody in the Commonwealth, and they need fixing. I mean, like, it's a perfect area for him to have, I think, for the governor to have highlighted, here's my vision for things that have a major impact right here in Massachusetts. Susan?
Yeah, again, I think it's a very Charlie Baker speech. He is a nuts and bolts kind of guy. But I would agree. What struck me, I sort of was going through, you know, we're going through the laundry list and I'm saying, okay, that's good. But like, what's ahead? Like, what are we looking for? What are we going to, you know, what's our bold idea? What's the big thing we're going to do? Or, you know, just kind of put our state on the map. And that just didn't come in this speech. I repeat, from a future perspective, I felt this speech was focused more on the style of how he's going to govern than what he's going to do. And that surprises me in some respects. I do think that's a lost opportunity. And I do think you're right, Meghna, that people do want collegiality. They want people to work together.
Well,
they
civility
want, you know, to get done.
In politics. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I give him credit for that. But you also want some big ideas and some vision and some place to take your state that is big and bold, I think.
Jim, healthcare, education, housing, I mean, a lot of these things the governor has been vocal on. I mean, it was just earlier this month he sent a big 9-page letter to the House Majority Leader saying we want to preserve the system of health insurance we have here in Massachusetts.
Amen on all three. Look, on health care, this is a dance with the national, with the federal government. He's going to have to do. Again, I was saying before about the waiver. We have a $53 billion waiver, $54 billion waiver that helps us pay for what we've chosen to do here in Massachusetts. And we have, from the beginning, greatly depended on the federal government to pick up a huge piece of that. Should the Trump administration just do something simple and say, look, for all states, we want to cut out 4, 5, 6% of what you're getting through waivers and other mechanisms, that will put a hole the size of Texas in our budget. Charlie Baker, for the rest of his administration, will chase the hole. And housing, huge issue. And it's one that's related to transportation. And again, there's a lot in the speech about what's gotten done. And frankly, it's hard stuff to do.
Yeah.
And people don't give it enough credit. That said, the longer term challenges that we have are mobility and housing, which are inextricably linked. The final one is education. You know, the governor got a shellacking at the polls. Empowerment zones, look, I don't want to call it refried beans, but it's pretty close to that. We've seen the pilot schools. We've seen Horace Mann charter schools. We've seen innovation schools. And all of them have had very, very modest success in closing the achievement gap. I'm not saying he should go back at charter schools, but there has to be something else out there that he says this will be the vision. If the voters have said no to an expansion, a substantial expansion of charter schools, here's what I want to do. Here's what I'll do on vocational technical schools. Here's what I'll do on METCO. There wasn't really a great sense of urgency. And I think on education, it's a big deal because we actually are seeing a decline in our performance on national assessments. Mm-hmm.
So let me play devil's advocate here for a moment or / forever, because I want to come back to the fact that the governor made the proactive choice to end his speech. Again, I mean, Susan, you call it with a focus on style over substance, but it was a proactive choice that he made.
Yes.
And I would say that for those of us in a studio like this who spend all of our time thinking about policy and politics and white papers and plans and proposals and the nuts and bolts of, you know, moving the Commonwealth forward, maybe that's not enough. But for folks out there, regular voters who kind of suffer day in and day out with whatever the realities of their lives are, maybe, honestly, and again, I say this with the 2016 election as the backdrop, maybe that is enough. Maybe it is inspiring, refreshing, I don't know, heartening to hear a governor say, I'm a Republican governor in a largely Democratic state, and I am going to stand up for civility, bipartisanship, working across party lines.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you can be for all of those things and still have big ideas and big goals. And I agree with the three things that Jim said. I think housing is a really big deal. I think transportation and how people are going to get to jobs is a really big deal. And I think on the education front, quite frankly, no one's talking about higher ed. Everyone, how many people do we know who either can't afford to send their kids to college or kids who can't pay off their student debt? I mean, to me, that's a crisis that we should be dealing with. So I do feel like they're not one or the other.
Should we be looking bigger? I mean, honestly, and Jim, I know I kind of threw it in there as a joke before, but I mean, is this Charlie Baker starting to talk to us about national ambition? Like, he's not going to make promises in a speech like the State of the Commonwealth tonight that maybe he's not sure he can keep?
No.
No. I think you make bigger promises if you have national ambitions.
You have to make bigger promises.
See, I would be a terrible candidate.
For people who want to have an active governor who will manage things and fix the Department of Children and Families, who will fix.
Yeah.
He's their guy, and he wants to do the work. But if you're looking for vision.
Yeah, maybe they didn't hear it. You're listening to special coverage of Governor Baker's State of the Commonwealth Address from Radio Boston and WBR. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Susan and Jim, stand by for just one second, because I want to briefly turn to Jeff Deal. He's a state representative from the 7th Plymouth District, and he served as Massachusetts campaign chair for Donald Trump. Mr. Deal, welcome back to the show. Can you say that again? Are you there, Jeff Deal?
Yep. Can you hear me?
There we go. Now we got you.
There we go.
Hey,
thanks for having me on.
So, Mr. Deal, give me your reaction to Governor Baker's speech. What did you hear there at the end when the governor was saying that he's not going to let Washington talk to Massachusetts?
Well, I like it. And the fact is, I think we've got a senior senator from our state that continues to play politics with the election after this is over. I think it's time to put these aside, stop blocking secretaries, let President Trump get on with the business of governing the nation. I think we've got a lot of work to do. Of course, with the health care reform nationally will be a big part of what happens here in Massachusetts with savings to allow us greater flexibility with our budget. So I think it all works together. And I agree. Time for no more partisan politics.
No more partisan politics. Okay, interesting. So, did you think that the governor said there at the end was as close as he would get to directly criticizing President Trump?
I didn't hear it as a criticism. Like I said, I think there is a delegation from Massachusetts, or at least representatives from Massachusetts, that didn't attend the inauguration, for example, for reasons that really go beyond what's good for Massachusetts. I mean, Senator Ted Kennedy was known as the liberal lion in Washington, and he worked with Republican presidents, Republican governors in Massachusetts. I don't see that kind of action being helpful when people are still protesting in their own way the new president.
Mm. Now, Jeff, you probably heard Susan Tracy and Jim Sturgis say that they wished that the governor had come to the table with a bigger vision for the next couple of years of his governorship here. Do you agree with that?
No, actually, I think... Charlie Baker has been known from the get-go as wanting to be a guy in the weeds, fine-tuning government, and obviously fixing areas where there's massive problems. DCF, he's done an incredibly great job. I have people working for DCF in my district who've told me how the turnaround's been pretty amazing. That's great news. The fact that the T is, they've got the concessions, are able to make a lot of changes, I think that's fantastic news. I think that he really has a relationship with legislators that allows him to fix what's going on. And he always said, I'm going to fix what's going on with Massachusetts. I care about this state, and I'm going to work, mm-hmm. night and day to fix it.
Well, that's State Representative Jeff Deal from the 7th Plymouth District. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
Let's turn right next to you, State Senator Sonia Chang Diaz from the 2nd Suffolk District. Senator Chang Diaz, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Meghna. It's good to be with you.
So great to have you. What was your response to what you heard from Governor Baker tonight?
Well, I would say there were some things to like and some places where I wish he had said more, or as you said a little earlier from one of your other commentators, wish he had proposed a bigger, bolder vision. So I'd say, mixed bag.
Well, I mean, we know that you've been focused a lot, for example, on education. The governor talked about looking ahead. He's going to propose increasing Chapter 70 support for K-12 education by more than $90 million. Do you like that idea?
Well, certainly I like the idea of an increase, but where the governor has characterized the increase that he's proposing as I keep hearing him use the word historic to characterize that increase, and I'm reminded of that line from The Princess Bride about you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. Look, if you proposed $1 increase over last year in our Chapter 70 funding, strictly speaking on paper, would that be an historic increase? By the letter of the law, sure. But I think I know the governor, is a very smart man, and he knows that there's such a thing as inflation. And if you control that proposed level of spending for inflation, or even what we're spending this current year, if you control that for inflation, we're spending 7% less now on K-12 education than we were 15 years ago. So even with the governor's proposed increase, that doesn't even come close to closing that gap. So definitely not what I would call historic or a big vision.
Well, that's State Senator Sonia Chang Diaz, who represents the 2nd Suffolk District. Senator Chang Diaz, thank you so much for joining us again tonight.
Thanks, Magda.
Well, let me turn back to Susan Tracy and Jim Sturgis here in the studio with us. So now that the governor has given his speech, I mean, what would you like to see him go for or go after next? I mean, what would you think his priorities should be starting tomorrow?
Well, look, the Bridgewater State Hospital was the thing I was most excited about in the speech, because I think it is something that will set the bar in a different way for how we think about mental health. It has been a black mark on our state mm-hmm. for a long time, with people dying there, Titicut Follies. The documentary was made by Richard Wiseman a long time ago, was banned by the state because it was so damning of what was happening there. I think that is that's a DCF-level fix. For folks who work at that program to show that kind of attention to the programming there. That's going to be a tough fight.
Yeah.
The MBTA is going to continue to be a tough fight. If Baker wants to be Mr. Fix-It and really focus on that, which I think is true, he's going to do it every single day this year and next year. And that is just tough work.
Susan, do you think he's opened up an area of potential weakness here by not having a stronger, in terms of his reelection effort? He hasn't actually formally announced that he will run again, but let's just presume for the moment that he will, by not coming out with that stronger vision that the two of you tonight have said you've hungered for?
I think in the long run, that could be problematic for him. Look, I give him credit for doing the nuts and bolts. I give him credit for taking on kind of tasks that are hard and difficult, and I completely agree on Bridgewater. I mean, that was the most concrete part of that speech. So I give credit to all those things. But ultimately, you're the governor. You're not a legislator. You're not a chair of a committee. You're the governor. You are the leader of the Commonwealth. And I do think that it's not enough to just do your job and do the nuts and bolts of it. I do think that you should be a leader and you should have some big ideas. I do.
Well, I'm going to end by quoting a little bit of the governor's speech in terms of his call once again for bipartisan efforts and a sense of cooperation, when he said that wedge issues may be great for making headlines, but they do not move this Commonwealth forward. Success is measured by what we accomplish together. So we'll see in the next year or two what exactly it is that he and the legislature do manage to accomplish together. Susan Tracy, president of the Strategy Group and former state representative, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thanks, Magda.
And Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute, thank you so much as well.
Thank you.
That's it for this special coverage of Governor Baker's State of the Commonwealth Address for 2017. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is a special edition of Radio Boston.